I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. In the 24 hours since our last broadcast, we witnessed the horrifying spectacle of President Donald Trump vigorously defending white supremacists, equating their actions in Charlottesville, Virginia last weekend with the actions of counter-protesters. And early this morning, following a Monday night vote by the City Council, Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh had Confederate monuments removed from four locations around the city. My guest today is Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage. As a playwright, performer, and director, he's no stranger to the power of acting, truth-telling, staging, and symbolism. We'll talk about white supremacy, false equivalency, and the power of an empty pedestal. Plus, a conversation with a college counselor who's featured in the hit documentary film, Step. First, the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Much has happened since we were last together. So first, an update on one of the topics that we discussed yesterday here on the program. We talked with City Councilman Eric Costello and Brandon Scott about what should be done with Baltimore's Confederate monuments, which include a statue of Lee and Jackson in Wyman Park and a monument to Supreme Court Chief Justice Roger Taney in Mount Vernon. Well, very early this morning, before dawn, all four of these monuments were taken from their pedestals and carted away on flatbed trucks. This is on the order of Mayor Catherine Pugh, who cited safety concerns after the violence in Charlottesville over the weekend. I also mentioned yesterday another statue of Taney, which has stood for years on the grounds of the state capitol. About an hour after we went off the air yesterday afternoon, Governor Larry Hogan announced that he will ask the State House Trust to remove the statue from the State House grounds. Earlier this week, Speaker Mike Bush had supported that action, and Senate President Mike Miller indicated that although he is opposed to the action, he would do nothing to impede it. Then, of course, yesterday afternoon, we had the incredible and despicable and hideous spectacle of the President of the United States unambiguously equating the actions of white supremacists and neo-Nazis and Ku Klux Klan members in Charlottesville with the behavior of what he called the alt-left. The reaction to the president's comments at an impromptu news conference at Trump Tower continued to pour in at gusher levels. It's not possible to keep up with all of them. One tweet stands out to me, however, for its hollowness. Unless he has commented further than the tweet that I read early this morning, for me at least, the rather anodyne response of House Speaker Paul Ryan is on par with the disgusting and insulting remarks that the president made. Ryan tweeted the following last night: "We must be clear, white supremacy is repulsive. This bigotry is counter to all this country stands for. There can be no moral ambiguity." Gee, I mean, do you think Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell, or closer to home, Congressman Andy Harris, the only Republican member of the Maryland delegation, seem, at least at this juncture on this very sad day, to be unwilling to directly repudiate the bigotry of the president and to distance themselves from him? So we'll have more on all of this on Friday on the Midday News Wrap, but we will also talk about it today with a theater artist who knows a lot about the power of speech, the importance of physical space, and the significance of silence. Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, has been the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage since 2011. Next summer, he will leave that position after writing and directing a new production that will premiere next spring. During his tenure, the theater completed a $28 million renovation, and he produced three of the best-selling shows in the theater's history. As a playwright, he has premiered several new works here in Baltimore, and he made great strides in diversifying the center stage audience. In 2012, Queen Elizabeth II made Kwame Kwe Arma an Officer of the British Empire, that's the OBE after his name, for his service to drama. Kwams, it is always a pleasure to see you, sir.
Huge pleasure to be here with you, as always.
You are welcome to join our conversation about all that's been going on in these last few days, from Charlottesville to Trump Tower, as well as all that's been going on at Center Stage over the last 6 years during the tenure of Kwame Kwe Arma. Our phone number, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org, to follow us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall. You can also tune in to Studio A on Facebook Live at the WYPR Facebook page. So, Kwame, you know a lot about acting. You know a lot about writing.
Yeah.
You know a lot about filling a stage with things that are compelling to look at, provocative to look at. So it seems to me that all of these things that we've talked about over the last, or that we've had in the news over the last few days, are strangely in tune with your expertise and the things that you've spent a lot of time thinking about. One of the things I want to ask you about is the president as an actor.
Mm.
On Saturday, he delivered remarks which had been written down for him. He, you know, went off script a couple of times and said some pretty calamitous things. But then on Monday, was it last night? I've lost track of it. Tuesday, yeah. On Monday, he cleaned up his act a little bit, tried to circle around and say the words he seemed to refuse to say on Saturday. And then last night, yesterday afternoon in New York, he seemed to be his real self. When you see this from a performance standpoint, when you see this in terms of authenticity, what do you observe?
I think it's really important that, you know, anyone who's in a leadership position has to think about how do you present your most authentic self? How do you negotiate the questions that come at you and answer them as well with a truthful and a kind of almost relaxed manner? And so if I was advising the president, which of course I'm not, that you want to say, be yourself in this televisualized age, in this age of celebrity, in this age where actually we're now voting for people less on whether they are qualified for it and far more about how well we think we know them and if we'd like to have a beer with them or not. And so when I look at the president, I see his desire to be his natural, authentic self. I also see his desire to say, I am who I am, and I have a base that cares about me speaking to them almost exclusively. And so, as an actor, actually, I ask myself, where does performance begin and where does performance stop with everything to do with modern day politics and everything to do with the election of this president? Where does it stop? Where does it begin? And if there's one thing I'd say about Donald Trump is that he understands audience. He understands how to play to his audience. He understands ratings. He understands the performance of ideology or the performance of an idea. So how I would rate him is actually really good at being true to who he really is.
Because it's interesting, folks have often commented, as you just have, that Trump has this, you know, deep-seated understanding of his audience. And maybe that's why on Saturday he seemed stilted and uncomfortable, and on Monday he was stilted and uncomfortable because he was speaking to a group that wasn't his audience. He was trying to placate people who weren't his base, as it were. Although when he went off script on Saturday, he ended up, in fact, placating them quite nicely by saying, you know, the violence was on many sides. Right? But then when we tried to make up for it on Monday, he just seemed incredibly awkward, inauthentic, and fake to me, at least. And then yesterday, it seemed like, okay, this is the real Trump. Look, you guys, you don't know what's going on.
And I might say, actually, and, you know, of course, I'm a director, so I love subtext. I would say, actually, the great acting was the second statement, was actually the one that looked stilted and stiff and auto-cued. That was the one actually where he was subconsciously and subtextually saying to his base or to the people that like him, see, guys, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I'm forced to do this. I really don't want to do it. So, but actually that was master acting because he was communicating with his body, with his mind and with his words, really what he wanted to say. And so actually, I would say that's where I would give him the awards for great acting. He communicated everything that he wanted to say without using words at all.
We have an email here from Williams, from a woman named Elaine, who says, really, I don't know who's writing the copy there. By the way, it's me writing the copy. But the use of the adjective vigorously to describe the president's alleged defense of white supremacists is rather over the top. I'm not even sure how what the president had said concerning the protesters in Charlottesville could have been even misconstrued as a defense, but it has. Per usual with media in this country, it's taken on a life of its own. Stick to the facts, not your feelings or political beliefs. Well, thank you for that email. When you talk about subtext, this woman is hearing those speeches in a very different way than I'm hearing them, than perhaps you're hearing mm-hmm. them, than perhaps millions of other people are hearing them. I mean, that has to do not just with the speaker of the words, but with the hearer of the words.
Totally and utterly. And one of the big lessons I think I learned as an adult is it's not what you say, it's what is heard. And what I worry about, Tom, and this affects media, period, is while, and this affects us all, society, while the media is under such attack, with fake news being taunted every moment, is what does that do for the future of journalism? That even if we're whatever political position you sit on, we know that we need the press. And if you undermine one of the most important institutions in civilization, in the West, what happens in 5 years' time? Who do we believe? Who do our children believe? How does it help us to have fragmented truths be perpetuated over and over again? And I worry about this blanket statement that the moment, and journalists actually are allowed to have feelings. They're allowed actually to say, this is how I feel about something. And you can challenge it, but it is how I see it. As a country, I think it's terribly important that we really think about the consequences of attacking the media in this way and undermining the trust that we have in it. Everybody has to be objective. I don't believe everything I read, nor should I. We must be objective, but a blanket kind of, it's the liberal press and therefore it's wrong, I think harms all of us.
And of course, you know, the first thing to be said is, and let me reemphasize that what I read in the introductions to our segments, all of the segments, I write those things. This comes from me, not from some staffer or something, number one. Number two, our emailers' comments are welcome at this table.
Yes.
Everybody is welcome at this table. And yes. Number three, I cannot pretend that I am not absolutely appalled by the behavior of the President of the United States. I cannot pretend that his behavior isn't, in my estimation, horrific, because and I use the word vigorously defending the white supremacists, because any comment that does not repudiate them completely or that seeks to elevate their behavior to the level of behavior of people who were there protesting against racism, against white supremacy, against anti-Semitism, I think is in fact a vigorous defense.
But also, isn't that one of the wonderful tenets of being an American? Is the thing that says, I love my country so much that I will defend its dignity with my intellect and with my spirit and with my mind.
One hopes.
Right? I mean, that's
one. These are the guys that are chanting, Jews will not replace us. You know? And so, yeah, I'm against those guys. And I'm against anybody who stands up for them in any way, shape, or form.
I can only define that as good Americanism. Is that you say, I sometimes worry because I think America is so big. And it is the world's superpower and leading superpower. And so actually it often, or sometimes in my humble opinion, doesn't have to worry about the way the rest of the world looks at it. But actually as one of the leaders of the world and the moral leaders of the world, it's really important that no matter who's in the White House, no matter what they say, that actually the outside world understands that articulation, which can be perceived as racist, actually not every American feels that way, yeah. That there is diversity of thought.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for the rest of the world.
But also a yearning that our president would in some way speak for at least most of us.
Yes. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case right now.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important for America to know that the rest of the world looks to it. And I think we all understand and we all agree that xenophobia, racism, that anti-Semitism, that these things belong to centuries long gone. These should not be the badges that we wear today. And I'm happy to say, living in America, I meet more people who stand on the side of right than I do, that, and I mean right as I see the world, other than the side of a kind of 20th, 19th, or 18th century worldview.
Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE, is my guest. He's the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage. We'll have more with Kwame Kwe Arma when we return. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Midday on your public radio. Member-supported 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. You are listening to Midday. Coming up a little later on our program today, a conversation with an extraordinary woman who is featured in an extraordinary film. Paula Dofat is the director of college counseling at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. She and others featured in this movie about a group of incredible students who are part of a championship STEP team. If you don't know what STEP is, then check out the movie, which conveniently enough is called STEP. When you meet Paula Dofat in a few minutes, you'll learn about the power of STEP and the many ways in which the school nurtures and cultivates the talent of their kids. That's coming up a little later today. Tomorrow on Midday, it's another installment of What You Got Cooking with our resident foodies John Shields of Gertrude's at the BMA and longtime restaurateur Sasha Wallhandler. We'll be joined by Chef David Thomas, who's going to open his latest restaurant, Ida B's Table, next month. We'll talk about soul food and Southern cooking. Plus, Midday theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review Alice and the Book of Wonderland at the Annapolis Shakespeare Theater. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is the acclaimed artistic director, stage director, playwright, performer, and writer Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE. He is the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage. He'll be leaving the theater at the end of this upcoming season. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. To find us on Twitter, our handle is @MiddayTomHall. Kwame, I want to talk about this notion of equivalency, because you write characters, you make people up in your little head. You concoct people. And this notion that certain people's motivations are equivalent or morally equivalent or equal in either their goodness or rottenness is interesting. We got an email yesterday from a woman named Monica who said, "There is no equivalency between these stupid racists and the stupid blacks looting businesses in Ferguson, Missouri, and burning businesses and cars in Baltimore. Really? They are both equally wrong, and they are both equally racially motivated, and they are both equally offensive. The only difference is that these racists didn't destroy any businesses." So this notion that the white supremacists are somehow, you know, just as equally awful as the people who were rioting during the uprising here or other places. How does that strike you?
Well, it's tremendously interesting, isn't it, Tom? As we know, the Chinese proverb is, may you live in interesting times. And actually, that's a curse rather than a...
We got that taken care of.
Yeah. And, you know, false equivalencies are always very dangerous, I think, because when I look at, and when one listens to the words Black Lives Matter, for instance, that right at the kernel of that was saying, please respect who I am. It was saying, I'm receiving things that I am perceiving we should not. And so it's very different, in my humble opinion, to saying, I believe I belong to a group that is superior racially than anyone else. One is born out of a defensiveness. One is born out of an offensiveness.
And motivation matters, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
For any character that you're going to write or portray.
It just does. And so I worry about the false equivalency because it means that everything is everything. And if you were to hit me and then I were, or to hit me 10 times and then I were to respond once, that somehow that's equivalent. I think it's dangerous, and I think it's anti-intellectual. And I think we have to be really mindful, particularly when we live in an intellectual property age. We have to be really mindful about our words. Words matter. Equivalencies matter. And there has to be an honesty and a truth. And if I'm creating a character that wishes actually just to dodge and to have plausible deniability, I can use a false equivalency with almost everything. So when I hear that, I worry. But then I also know that it's not just about what we say, it's about what we hear. And invariably we hear what we want to hear. We hear something that will support the position that we feel most comfortable in. And I think what I've discovered in America in my 6 years here is that America has moved forward in a way that we might not have recognized before, that we might not have articulated before. And what we're seeing is the forces of saying, I can't do this. I don't know if I can keep up with this. I learned this lesson very beautifully from James Baldwin. And he wrote a play called Blues for Mr. Charlie. And basically the premise is a young black man from the South goes to the North, and he comes back to the South and he says, I can't live this way anymore. And he's murdered. And the white father says, who actually murdered him, says, near the end of the play, if I let him do and claim equality, then my child will inherit less. And what father wants their child to inherit less? That was James Baldwin that put me into the mindset of someone who was racist and made me understand, and then made me say, so how do we negotiate a space where you don't feel that you're losing, but that we understand structural inequalities? And I think that's the debate that we're having mm-hmm. right now in our country. How do we live inside the mind and the heart and the spirit of the person who is saying, I am afraid, I just want my share of goodness.
Yeah, and the conversation about the monuments and whether they should stay up or come down, and finally the mayor made the decision they're coming down, and she did it sort of quickly and, you know, quietly, as she said in her press conference this morning. It's that same conversation. How can we have a space where we can have a quiet conversation about it, a reasonable conversation? But it seems so difficult to have a reasonable conversation, even with a person like the President of the United States, who talk about hearing what you want to hear. I mean, it has these sort of ossified notions of, to make the statement that there are good people among the white supremacists is extraordinary.
It is. And it's why I'm glad that you've asked me to comment on it through the lens of a dramatist or through the lens of a director, because ultimately everything that we say on a stage is speaking to the audience that is before us and the audience that we really care about. Every theatre who has to be sponsored worries about what it says on its stage in case it offends someone. I think what we saw with our president is saying, I understand my audience. I understand my core, certainly an amplified, loud section of my core. And I need to let them know from this stage that I hear them. I hear you. And so for us, I think we also, and I say us who may not believe in that, I think it is for us also to say everybody's welcome to the table, but we too will articulate the America that we want. We too will celebrate the America that we have dreamt for, that we have worked towards, and that we are heading towards. And it doesn't matter how afraid you are, come along, because we're going to bring you forward with love.
Here's an email from Michelle, who says, I moved to Columbia from New York approximately 24 years ago. For many years, I would make my way back to New York to see plays on Broadway. I started attending plays at Center Stage as a result of one of your outreach efforts, and I've been doing so ever since. I love the plays that speak to a wider, diverse audience. I also love Center Stage's redesign. You are definitely an innovator, and you'll be surely missed. So that's a fan named Michelle.
Well, thank you so much.
You're married to a woman named Michelle. I assume that's not your wife.
I said, please send
please,
something positive in.
Please, text something in. Let's go to the phones. Patrick in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Kwame Kwe-Arma.
Yeah, good afternoon. Kwame, very well done for a chap who grew up in Acton Town. We're very, very proud of you.
Oh, bless you.
Well, I had a larger question, I think, from time immemorial, whether it was Churchill or Napoleon or Trump in this case, leaders have always used theater, particularly when they want to confuse the masses or when they want to perform political sleight of hand. So from your perspective as an artistic director, what do you do, how do you train your audience to see subtext, to sort of see in between the lines?
Thank you. I was in Acton Town only the other day, so I'm overjoyed to hear your voice. I think to answer your question, however, is that one always has to understand the intelligence of your audience and know that we are trained as human beings to read subtext. We're trained to listen to what is not being said, but what is being produced before you via the body. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. Our modern form of theatre is television news even. And so I think what we're seeing, or the time that we're living in, is that actually we're seeing some parts of the media not actually speaking to the intelligence of the audience. And actually just want to give monologues and just want to tell them exactly how to think. And I think every time that we see that, or every time that rears its ugly head, we should call it for what it is, manipulation rather than news.
There's a tweet that the president sent out this morning about probably an hour and a half ago. It says simply, "Memorial service today for beautiful and incredible Heather Heyer, a truly special young woman. She will be long remembered by all!" Exclamation point. When we talk about subtext, when we talk about authenticity, there are a whole lot of people who are going to say that that tweet is inauthentic, that the president doesn't mean it, that he's posturing. I mean, an hour before that, he sent out a tweet that simply said, "Make America great again." You know, he sent out another tweet talking about how this candidate that he supported in the Senate race in Alabama had picked up lots of votes since he, Trump, endorsed him. So there's a believability and a credibility issue with the president who makes statements as like the ones he's been making over the weekend or before that, you know, against North Korea, or before that, you know, you pick your statement, the birtherism and stuff. Is it possible for a person like Donald Trump to gain the trust and respect of people who have become accustomed to his fabrication and
again, and forgive me, I sound like I'm repeating myself, but again, it's about audience. Who are you writing for?
So should we then assume that he just doesn't care what all those other people ultimately think? They're just part of the fake news establishment that's aligned against him?
I think that we've seen him articulate that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm struggling, who do I speak to? I speak to the people that like me. I speak to the people who are going to support and defend me. And so some of us may read those tweets and see an exclamation mark at the end and go, why is there an exclamation mark after you said remembered? You know, we kind of go, really? However, if I want to support him, I can use that tweet to say, there, he said it. What more do you want?
Mm-hmm.
It's everything is audience.
Speaking of audience, I want to talk about the nature of the kinds of conversations that we are now having. I mean, here we have white supremacists carrying torches, chanting blood and soil, Jews will not replace us in, you know, a moderate-sized city in the United States of America. So the question is, how do we have a conversation that is, in fact, civil, that is, in fact, productive, that moves the needle? This is an email we got yesterday when we were talking about the monuments with Councilman Brandon Scott. And so Joe writes, "I did not hear Councilman Scott denounce the individuals who took down the monument in Durham by physical means, breaking the law. Is it okay for people to break the law and use force as long as you like their cause? I'd like to hear his spin on this." And then he ends by saying, "Can you quote me verbatim on this and not edit it for politeness?" So to take the substance of what he said, first of all, Councilman Scott did say he thought it was a bad idea for people in Durham to take the statue down. There have been people who have been arrested in that. But I was fascinated by the end. Can you not edit it for politeness? It was like he was proud and asserting that he meant to be impolite to Councilman Brandon Scott in this conversation about the monuments. How does How does one respond to that? If you were writing two characters in a scene that had these views, how would you write them?
I'm sorry that I'm repeating myself, but it's about love, right? It's about quality of listening. If someone is acting out, I want you to know that I'm being rude. As a parent, if your child is doing that, what do you do? What you don't do is you don't respond by smacking them. What you don't respond by joining them at exactly the same level. What you try and do is say, I'm hearing your pain. But also, to be impolite, there is nothing good in that. Yeah. And our culture at the moment...
It sends things south.
It's just
every
automatically.
Time. Yeah.
And our culture at the moment is, or some parts of our culture, is celebrating being impolite. And it depresses me because there is nothing like good manners. There is also nothing like saying exactly the same thing politely and actually having your point heard and not rejected. And so I think one of the issues about the environment we find ourselves in with this presidency is that Donald Trump, by his own admission, is a fighter. He's a pugilist. If you poke him, he'll come back and smack you. And I worry about the 11 to 14-year-olds who, by osmosis, will see this and think that this is success. These are the qualifications of success. And I think it's up to us as parents and as citizens to say that has been successful and good for Donald Trump, but it may not be good for you.
I was fascinated in Governor Hogan's statement yesterday afternoon in which he said that he now supports taking the statue of Roger Taney down from the State House grounds. He said, Maryland has always been a state of middle temperament, which is a guiding principle of our administration. So we can't hide from history, nor should we, but the time has come to make clear the difference between properly acknowledging our past and glorifying the darkest chapters of our history. But when he says Maryland has always been a state of middle temperament, does middle temperament actually exist? You think a lot about people that you direct on stage, people that you create to be on stage. Is that a real thing?
I think it's an aspiration, and I think it's a good aspiration. It's an aspiration which says, let's not hide, let's not get hyped, let's not go underhyped. Let's try and find that middle ground. And I think in the world of politics, that's important. I think in the world of theatre, that's important. I try and create a season that speaks to everyone. Everyone is welcome at that table. And actually, that middle ground can sometimes feel like it's a compromised ground, except that it's right at its core, it's saying, I want to make sure that everybody has access to the goods. And I mean good as not in mercantile good, but in the things that come from this space. So I think as much as it can sound slightly vague, I think it's a worthy aspiration.
Clarence in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Midday with Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. And I have enjoyed your program with your guest. He will truly be missed in Baltimore when he leaves. My comment is about what the lady said about your comments. Words matter, and all you have to do is listen to Donald Trump when he speaks. He is truly a racist. It starts back when he was growing up, Central Park Five, renting to black people, not wanting black people to count his money as casinos. This man is leading this country down. And people are hearing what they want to hear. You cannot blame the media. You listen to his speech yesterday when he was answering questions. He told us who he really is.
Well, thank you for the call, Clarence. You know, again, people hear different things from the same statements because conservative media, Breitbart, Newsmax, those kinds of folks are covering yesterday's press conference much differently than CBS or NBC or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post. The nature of the audience matters. You know, when you do a play like one of the greatest productions you did during your tenure here, which, by the way, should remind folks, isn't over yet. You got another year.
Another year.
Right? We're stuck with you for another year. was One Night in Miami. Three incredible civil rights figures in an imagined conversation in a hotel room in Miami in the 1960s. And so for people to understand those characters, Cassius Clay, who became Muhammad Ali, the people who are viewing that, who are experiencing that theatrical experience, how do you speak to everybody? You know, how do you calculate, or do you calculate as a director and as a writer, what the audience is going to hear?
Yes, I think most importantly, as a playwright or as a director, even as an artistic director, one has to be true to themselves. And you have to say, whatever it is, and particularly as a writer, whatever it is that I'm saying here, I need to make sure that everybody's point of view at least gets heard once. I have to love each character on the stage, be they a criminal of the worst kind or an angel of the best. And so, again, that's the buzzword, audience, isn't it? It's making sure that you love the sense of community. I think what we're hearing right now in the country is that we're not feeling a sense of community anymore, or at the moment. We're feeling a sense of separateness. And I've noticed that since over the last 6 years or so, I've seen the country fragment into political ideologies and hide sometimes behind them. And I think our job in the media, our job in art and in theatre, is to say, let's tear down those barriers and let everybody have a valid point of view, but let us be really clear. We are one. Let's let every story be told. And I think we find ourselves right now.
But there are folks who simply don't believe that.
Yes, there are.
I mean, the Jews that won't replace us, you know, that chant means they're not buying that. They're not buying that newspaper. You know?
Yeah, they're not. And I think ultimately.
But that doesn't mean that the rest of us can't still aspire to it and think it.
Yes. I mean, for me, you know, there are many people who disagree with my views, and that's cool in the gang. Do I think, however, that because of it, they should die? Because of it, somehow they shouldn't have access to university, to university or to work? Do I think that somehow they should be thrown into prison? Absolutely not. How we negotiate community is everything. And right now, Tom, that's the thing that I think we as a nation have to say, no matter where we stand, on the right or to the left, our stories matter. Our words matter. The connotations and the subtext matter. Mm-hmm. And anything that divides us has to be vigorously debated.
And you've done so much to provoke thought about those very things. We're running out of time, so I want to ask you two quick questions.
Okay.
First of all, what's next? What's the next chapter after Center Stage?
I don't know. I don't know.
So nothing specific?
Nothing specific. I'm dedicated to the next year here, and I'm sitting in the wisdom of uncertainty.
There you go. That sounds nice. But it's actually scary.
It is that too.
Yeah,
but.
Can you tell us anything about the piece that you're going to write for Baltimore Center Stage in the spring?
I can't just yet, because we're just getting rights sorted out. But I'll make sure that you know very, very soon, as soon as we've signed.
All right. Well, we look forward to it. Look forward to this season, and look forward to having you back here on Midday. It's always good to see you, Kwame.
Thank you so much.
All right, Kwame Kwe Arma, OBE. He has been the artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage since 2011. He will be leaving that position next summer. We've got a link to what's happening at Baltimore Center Stage when their season begins next month on our website, wypr.org/midday. Coming up after a break, a conversation about how a STEP team changed the lives and career trajectories of some extraordinary students here in Baltimore. They are featured in the hit documentary film STEP. And when we come back from a break, we'll talk to the director of college counseling at their school about the film and about how she and her colleagues support and nurture their students. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.